We should just call this Claire Says in One Line What Matt Spends Half an Hour Trying to Explain segment.
Radio Bruges News is proudly presented by Cryomalt. With over 25 years in the field, Cryomalt is dedicated to providing the finest brewing ingredients to help brewers create the foundations of a truly excellent beer. They are your premium brewing partner and they're proud sponsors of Bruges News, and in particular, Bruges News Week, which is this, our regular wrap-up of all that has made news in beer this week. I'm your host, Pete Mitchum, and joining me to take a good hard look at the news, the views and the issues are the founder and editor of Australian Bruges News, Matt Kierkegaard, and ace reporter and senior journalist Claire Burnett. G'day, guys.
Morning, Pete.
Morning, Pete.
How do we find you this fine? It's a bit damp down here, but Cup Day was an absolute spanker, given that we were nominally allowed to leave our cages, and it was 30 degrees and then 24 degrees and then it just rained all day yesterday.
Well, that's Melbourne. I mean, you're just basically describing Melbourne.
Is it true that you get a day off?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Always. It's one of the longest gazetted public holidays, I think. Yeah. Probably Australia Day might be slightly longer as a gazetted, as a state public holiday. I think Cup Day probably.
Because
it dates back to 1887 or something like that.
That's crazy. That's the only reason Australia's kept the Queen for so long, because you get loads of holidays off for a birthday. We don't even get one. I told you this. We don't even get one in England.
But you have bank holidays.
In a hot second, we would swap Queen's birthday holiday for August the 1st, which is Racehorse's birthday. that's the way Australians are.
We
bet on two flies crawling up a wall, as the old expression goes. And not that I'm here to toot my own trumpet, but did tip four winners.
Well, the rest of the Bruges News team barely even marked. Like, we didn't even know there was a horse race on.
Nah, not our cup of tea, that.
We just lost no phone calls or emails for 2 hours.
Quite nice. Have a little
break. So very productive. And
we got loads done.
So the team are having an early mark on Friday afternoon, because it's not fair when every office in Australia stops for the cup and we were working through the powerhouse that is Australian Bruges News.
So hang on, just let me get this straight. So the Bruges News office team are getting Friday afternoon off because they didn't stop for 1 minute, 24 seconds while the cup was being run.
Oh, but it's never.
It's the whole afternoon. You know it, Pete.
Only stops for the 3:50 or whatever it is.
Yeah,
you've got the ridiculous hat, you've got the person who's walking around doing the sweeps, you've got everyone sort of planning lunch and things like that, and no work gets done.
No, absolutely.
And so I'll acknowledge that and thank my team, because they probably got more done in that 2 hours than they would have.
And for all our listeners out there keen to find out what happens on knockoff day. On a Friday in the Bruges News office, just there will be a live stream. plastic cup snakes and hollowed out watermelon heads.
Hats. There's no way I'll be recording that.
And they'll be skull and white claws.
As is the way when you own the business, I'll be working, because somebody has to be here to answer the calls.
I know. Fairly bad for you.
We're working on Fridays, aren't you? Operators here awaiting your call, dear listener.
Matt Kierkegaard, as always, taking one for the team.
He is a good egg, I'll not.
Which is code for I have no social life.
Not that far off. But anyway, news.
And that was said with love.
He needs you to come up, that's why.
Yeah, let's cross now live to the Australian Bruges News Media Centre for a wrap-up of stories making news in beer this week. And Claire, what do we begin with?
We're beginning.
Is it an anniversary?
It is. It's a biggie. It's a decade. What is now the Independent Brewers Association are 10 years in the game. So Matt actually spotted this one. On the 2nd of November 2011, an email was sent out announcing the launch of Craft Beer Limited, a national association for the benefit of the craft brewing industry. And it's been through loads of iterations.
So anyone going, Craft Beer Limited, what's that?
It's like a working title for a film, isn't it?
It just sort of sounds like a business. And I remember when it first came out, Craft Beer Limited, what's this Craft Beer Limited? But that's all part of the story, because... Go read it. Like, it was a really, really hard story to write, because you're writing a story about an industry that's not even celebrating its own anniversary. And if you look at the photo, the people around the room, it's now the independence movement. Owen Johnson, who was at the working committee, now works for HPA. Brendan Burris is by and large out of the industry. The Bruce great Pinchin. Irony of the photo. So when you look at the photo, just for listeners, you know, this
look how small that table is.
You took the photo.
I took the photo, so I'm not in it. But there's Jamie Cook, who was Stone and Wood, David Cryer, who was then Cryer Malt. You know, you've then got Bruce Peachy, who was brewing for Vale Ale, because you've also got Adam Tripp Smith. But Bruce Peachy had been a long term collaborator with a number of brands, and so you knew the industry.
Legend in the industry.
Brendan Varis from Ferrell, who still independent. Owen Johnson, Moo Brew, and then a lady by the name of Sarah Malecki, who was working for Vale and was there as the sort of recordist of it all. And so when you look at that group and that association that initially included the big brewers but is now the independence movement, you've got Jamie Cook, sold recently. You've got David Cryer, who was there as an observer and is still an industry champion. You've got Bruce Peachy, and Bruce is still popping up in media releases these days. You've got Brendan Varis, who was a champion leading light of the independence industry, sold and is now by and large out of the industry. You've got Brad Rogers, Stone Wood, Owen Johnson, who's now sales marketing manager for HPA. So again, still heavily in the industry, but out of brewing. And then Adam Tripp Smith, who, at that stage, Vale was a contract brand, a very effective marketing brand, and you had the people in the purity of the day going, what are you doing, being part of this, you're not even a real brewer kind of thing.
Charming.
And if you look at that group, he's the only person in that room that still counts as a member of the IBA through White Bay, which he founded. So he's gone the full circle.
And Convoy.
And well, so he's the guy who was looked askance on by the purists in the industry for not being a real brewer is the only person who is currently in the industry as a
still qualified to sit at the table
as a brewery owner with a 25% share of White Bay
upstairs at that pub that Matt can't remember the name of, sitting at that table going, well, it's just me now.
I will dig it out.
It does look a bit mafia-esque with the white tablecloths.
Well, look, it was, and it was fascinating. And this is a little bit below the fold in a sense, going into it in depth. But it was a little bit sad that the IBA, what is now the IBA, has gone through so many changes. It's gone through so. Dave Benighton was there actually. I just realised that he's not.
Oh, yep.
Pictured, so I'm not sure there are other photos that he was there. So maybe he was up.
It was probably his shout. He was at something. The bar.
But again, Mountain Goat sold, and the industry when you just in the very quick documenting of the major milestones or the upheavals that the industry went through, they launched on the 2nd of November 2011. Under the name Craft Beer Limited, because they'd been out consulting as the Australian Craft Brewers Association, and then a splinter group that called itself the Australian Real Craft Brewers Association.
I was loving all this drama.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't realise it was so contentious to start.
Not only did they say, look, we're not going to join you because you've got the big brewers in, but we're going to torpedo you by registering the name that you were going to go under and deny you of that, and simultaneously launch the Australian Real Craft Brewers Association, which is ARCBA. And so they had
photos of their meetings.
Well,
were you not invited, Matt?
I don't know if they ever actually met. There was a group, a loose configuration. I don't think they ever had, financial dues or anything like that. It was a special offer if you join us now for free. Mm-hmm. And, not dismissing their passion, and there were a lot of heated discussions in the early. There was a lot of robust discussion and disagreement about whether it should be independent small brewers, even though it wasn't called the independents, or whether the big brewers were in. And the thinking early on was, craft beer wasn't even settled in the consumer's mind. We didn't even know what craft beer was. We were discussing what craft beer was, and
there was still plenty calling it boutique or micro. Or those other terms all they knew, it wasn't Carlton Draft.
Yeah, now bear in mind, this is 10 years after, 10 years after Little Creatures launched, years. So it wasn't a new industry, but it was still a very, very, very fledgling industry. I think there were 100 potential brewery members at that stage. But the discussion was around how do we get the resources? How do we, you know, we can't just expect people who are running breweries that are very short-staffed anyway to run this association as well. We need it to be professionally run. We need, you know, paid people doing it. And where does that come from? And, you know, the decision was made, you know, we need to be a body that talks about craft beer, not marketing the business status of individual brewers at the time. And, you know, like I was at that stage on the opposite side of that argument, which is ironic given the way that that's all transpired. But it was, all credit to the steering committee that's represented there, the very first board of that's referred to in the article, which was the steering committee at launch, because it was still a steering committee where they launched it. They were hoping to get members. It was Brad Rogers, Jamie Cook, Brendan Varis, Dave Benighton, Miles Hull from Little Creatures when they brought Little Creatures in. And Little Creatures hadn't sold at that stage, I don't think, Pete. I think it was 2012 that Little Creatures...
It didn't sell till 2012.
Yeah, so they were still only less than, you know, whatever their ownership was. Owen Johnson, Bruce Peachy and Adam Tripp-Smith. You know, congratulations. And, you know, it was a little bit of a shame, I thought, that the industry, for whatever reason, and I don't know, that you know, but the IBA wasn't aware of the meeting because they've had such a change in hops, a change of staff, a change of focus, you know, there have been so much going on. But the people that worked really, really, really hard off their own bat, because there was no one to support and encourage them in that stage, they just saw the need for it. And they were shit-canned by people sort of saying, you're not real
craft brewers. Ostensibly their own.
Yeah. So anyway, we marked it. It passed, I mean, I say in the article, largely unnoticed. It was completely unnoticed because even when I wrote to some of the people in the photo, you know, they go, oh, is that today? Which is a shame because the industry shouldn't just be marking the glossy milestones, you know, the ones that are hard. They should be marking some really important ones like this, I think.
Just before we jump back into the news, are there plans for, you know, when interstate travel and borders are restrictions are lifted and that sort of thing, that is there some sort of celebration maybe at BrewCon or something?
But I think it was after we talked about the early days of the IBA on a podcast about 2 years ago that I thought, oh, gee, I wonder when it is. And so I dived into the emails to find out and found it. And I know that at that stage, you know, so 2 years ago, like I just threw it in the diary thinking, you know, this is something that we'll want to bring up at a later date. And I can't now remember whether I spoke to Alexis when she was director or Kylie in the early days of her being the CEO. But again, it was right at the start of her tenure, but tenure. Whoever said, you know, sort of had indicated that they were aware of it coming up. So again, it was an informal chat that I had, and I was told that they were aware. So I just sort of parked it for our own thing, and then when my bring up systems have said, oh look, you know, in 2 days' time, you've got, and I just reached out, said, oh, did you know that this is the case? However, it had passed, so I don't think they were even aware to have a plan, what the plan will be now. But you know, in a way, it's a little bit like when your birthday falls on Christmas or something like that, or, you know, when you're away or you're sick, you know, having your birthday later.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's never quite the same.
No.
But anyway, well, yeah, congratulations to everyone that, and you know, I don't think the IBA has ever been stronger than it is now, and congratulations for that.
Exactly. And now to name check two of the people who are at that table with our next two stories. First of all, we begin with a confirmation of, you heard it here first last week, but Coca-Cola are to exit beer in Australia and sell Feral Clear.
Well, we talked about it first. They probably heard it after because it didn't go to the podcast channel.
Oh, yeah, because it came out later. But everybody knew that we talked about it first.
Well, we still got the story out first.
That's
so
it. Yeah,
despite
that's it.
Coca-Cola's best attempts
that was a struggle and a half, wasn't it? So anyway, obviously we heard the news. We sort of bandied about a few ideas about what we were thinking, who it might sell to, etc. But obviously we found out, and it was confirmed later that day, that Coca-Cola are going to sell Feral, but they don't currently have a buyer and is looking for expressions of interest. I think there's a few interesting points to make. Obviously, they sold the brew pub very recently, considering they're wanting to sell the business. Matt and I were talking about it earlier.
Presumably when they knew they were going to sell the business.
Yeah, surely they do.
Well, I mean,
why would you do so that? Why do you sell it?
Let's look at that. A little bit more discussion of the news than we like to do in the news headlines, but it's still very germane. It's not a rabbit hole, I don't think. You'd think that a business with the multinational experience and things of Coca-Cola, Euro Pacific Partners, plans these things in advance. They talk about a strategic review, all of these sorts of things. So a strategic review of their operations, their brewing operations in Australia and presumably the rest of the region was underway. Despite that, somebody has gone, oh, look, you know, it's not really working out. Let's flog that off. Either they had the decision of the review and they've decided they're going to sell it, and then they've just decided to sell close the brew pub down. Weird. I think that they'd initially announced they were going to close it rather than sell it. But
yes, and then I believe original owner, was it Alistair?
It's on the Crafty Pint. So they wrote about that. Go see it if you haven't already. Talked about it. But you're sort of thinking, well, what sort of business minds are they? Because if you're going to sell off Feral, surely having that original place that Feral started would be an asset as opposed to a liability. Like, if you're running your own business and it's not making money, it's a liability. Mm-hmm. But if you're selling it off to somebody else, the place that brand was formed that you still own is an asset that they can decide, well, look, it's not making any money. We just want the brewing operations. We just want the brand. I thought
Coca-Cola was supposed to be a real sophisticated, strategizing type of company, but actually in the way we dealt with them.
Thank you for saying it better than I did.
And how we dealt with them and how they dealt with us was odd. And then obviously the strategy behind the brew pub was odd. And I was like, you guys, like, what are you doing? I don't know enough about Coca-Cola. Obviously they're a little bit out of our ballpark usually, apart from obviously the Feral connection.
But the way they have dealt with this,
so strange.
It's because, again, we reached out to them. We had the story cold. We knew it was selling. We had the gist of the story. And then you just do the journalistically decent thing. Do you have any comment?
And we got in touch with loads of them as well. Like, I emailed two of them, called three of them, texted one of them. Like, they had ample opportunity to reply.
I said, look, we're going to do a story, and then didn't even reply, didn't even acknowledge our email, didn't say, look, our release will be going out later, because they wanted to torpedo our story or control the story, which is just
so weird,
and it encourages bad journalism.
And I swear we've never done anything to Coca-Cola before. No. Like, I swear we haven't.
Anyway, but that's a little bit of inside baseball. So we held off, and they then sent out their release, fortunately, just as we'd
like 5 minutes after we'd press published and posted it to all our socials and stuff, and then they sent it out.
When they clearly weren't even going to acknowledge. But anyway, the way that they have gone about this just shows that one of the reasons why Feral hasn't prospered in the marketplace. You know, I think Feral isn't a tarnished brand in the industry. It's still got a very strong brand. The beer quality is up as strongly as it's always been. It's much loved in WA, but it's barely heard from on the west, outside of social media circles, purely because if this is how Coke operates, their head is so far up their ass that it's not surprising that they haven't done it. It's a little thing. Why would you buy a brewery and then mismanage it so badly? And I think when you look at, they just don't know, which incidentally is one of the criticisms that has always been of the big operations versus the small, dynamic, passionate, engaged, brewery owner telling his own story, that whenever you see these big operations come in. But Coke, certainly their narrative, whenever Bruce New spoke to them over the last couple of years since the sale, we're going to nurture this brand, we're going to love it, it's going to, and it just hasn't. So
it's an interesting contrast to how we've been dealing with Lion and CUB recently. I think they're being much more transparent in the way they deal with the media and us particularly, and absolutely kudos to them. Coca-Cola seemed to be stuck 20 years ago and just haven't figured it out that, being a bit more honest about it is going to be better for them in the long run. But whatever. They're out. They're leaving. We'll see them later.
Good riddance. Don't let the saloon door hitch on the arse as you leave. You bottlers of cheap, sweet, fizzy syrup.
Oh, anyway. My God, we don't sound bitter at all, do we?
Oh, no, but it, like, again, it's just one of those things. I think Lion and CUB have in many ways changed the way that they do business and the attention that they give to nurturing brands in a very, very positive way. They've learned. This just shows that there was a corporate hubris or arrogance within a big company that they were just the wrong people to try and nurture a brand.
Speaking of big companies that are not arrogant in any way, Convoy raises $30 million to fund expansion, Claire.
They have indeed. So Convoy, of the aforementioned Adam Tripsmith, just gone from strength to strength recently in the past couple of years. I can't believe I spoke to him, I think 2019, when I spoke to Adam when it launched, and it just has accelerated so much. They've done a Series D $30 million raise, combination of equity and convertible notes. The funds will accelerate Convoy's international expansion and an anticipated launch of Catch, which is their tracking and monitoring Internet of Things solution in the Northern Hemisphere. So bloody congratulations to them. That's amazing. That's so impressive. And just shows, you know, how strong it is as a business and the potential that Convoy has worldwide, I guess.
Yeah, and interesting. I didn't know they had Catch.
Yes, I didn't know it was called Catch. I remember speaking about that technology quite a while ago now, but it took a little while to get it off the ground, I think, as to be expected. Lots of tweaks to make and things like that. But Now they've got it. They've nailed it, and they're expanding it and rolling out. So, yeah, good on them.
Yeah.
What was your line, Pete, about ATS just sort of fishing some money out from behind the seat? So, clearly, we're starting to sort of see what sort of...
Put the hand in the back of the couch.
Money falling out of his pockets when he's going for his chewing gum kind of thing. But, yeah, clearly, we $30 million is outside of his reach. But,
it's very exciting. Couch change, is it?
No, the boy's done well. Speaking of doing well, not quite in the 30 million league, but 5.8 million raised by Mighty Craft.
Yeah, so this was an interesting one. Now, we discussed the Mighty Craft's quarterlies last week. They'd obviously made a loss, which is partially to be expected on account of COVID and lots of their venues closing down, making some interesting moves strategy-wise in relation to selling venues and either they're up for sale or selling them, and then the lease back for Jetty Road, for instance. But then we also mentioned that they were in a trading halt, and it seemed like such a coincidence because that we'd obviously heard about the Feral news and then Mighty Craft doing a trading halt, completely unconnected. Total coincidence. The trading halt was related to a 5.8 million share placement that Mighty Craft were doing. Funds going to be used to accelerate the company's whiskey strategy, which they did a nice shiny brochure about, and then also replace working capital funds due to impacts from lockdown. So I think that's probably a big section of that money is going to go towards working capital. Obviously, just kind of tells you how much of a struggle it has been, even for a company like Mighty Craft. But we'll see how they get along. They're always an interesting one to follow. They've obviously got some big names behind them, some experienced people behind them. But it just shows how difficult a market is. It's a hard times. We've all had it rough, and we're seeing it in people's quarterlies and their strategies going forward as well.
We love interest. I keep catching myself over and over again when we're writing the intros to Beer as a Conversations, or when we talk about, you know, the things that are interesting in this industry are just what captivate us. And Mighty Craft is just endlessly interesting when it's a new business model. They're trying to not own but activate. Go back and listen to some of the chats I've had with Mark Haseman. But, you know, it's not a new business anymore. It's publicly listed. They have to put their documents out. But, and to some extent, COVID is masking any hospitality-based strategy. You know, it's not really giving a true indication of how their strategy would have played out but for a global plague. Yeah, look, it's just interesting to see that they're not racing ahead. You know, it's well-resourced.
And I think we did think that at the start, I'm sure. And when you see, like you say, when you see a nice, shiny new business and they're doing something different, you're like, oh, this could be really cool, this could be really exciting. And then the realities of working in this market and in this country, and all these issues sort of start to impact them. So we'll see what they do going forward.
But and yes, they did a capital raise last week, mm-hmm. That was about building up their whiskey stock. So, you know, when you look at their revenue, they seem to be making a lot of, like, their growth that they were very loud talking up was coming from their acquisition of Adelaide Hills, which is the mismatch, the Hillsider, which seems to be a very strong brand that's going ahead. The breweries that
they included listed, a distillery, didn't it?
Adelaide Hills distillery.
Oh, sorry.
And so they did a capital raise.
Is Adelaide Hills Cider the same thing then?
I think they're all a part of the same group.
Well, it's Hillsider.
Hillsider, I think it's called.
Yeah,
okay. Hills. And Adelaide Hills Distillery. Okay, got it. Yep. That's where I'm getting confused.
So it's the group, and then they've got that nice hospitality operation in a nice part of the world and everything. And so that was where, funnily enough, I'd heard rumours that just before they announced that sale, that maybe they were going to buy Tribe, you know, which is or something like that, which seemed to make sense given, if any of their craft beer brands grow, they don't have an existing facility that their brands can be produced at scale.
And they don't want to have to expand every single facility as the brewery grows. They want maybe a centralized one.
It's like which child gets new clothes this year, and then who has to sort of wear, you know, the hand-me-downs, and, you know, like all of that, which is one of the things about the strategy that was always a little bit interesting to watch. And don't have any answers to that. You know, a lot of smart industry people in the industry, but as we've seen, smart doesn't necessarily overcome all obstacles, even if you're doing it a different way. So
there's a theme emerging from a few stories that we've had so far, and it's that old adage that if you want to get something done, ask a busy person. Ask somebody who's got so much on their plate because they get stuff done. And I think there's a theory too. I think you've got to have a motor, and people who get things done are just those people who they've just got the motor. And Mighty Craft, Convoy, these sort of, you know, real, and it's almost the polar opposite, I guess, of Coca-Cola.
they're very good at what they do.
I think there's something in some people that just, like, passion will only get you so far. And passion's great if you've got a hobby or whatever, and if you can use passion. But at the end of the day, passion doesn't pay the bills. You've got to turn that into hard work. So you've got to have that. You've got to have the pump.
Yeah, well, and look, I had this conversation, you know, launching a brand, and it goes back to the Stone and Wood chat that we had. You know, there's a whole lot of stuff that, you know, you start telling a story to the five people, you know, metaphorically, who know you. But then when your brand grows a little bit, your story needs to expand to, you know, people that don't necessarily know you, because it's less relevant to, you know, the further out you go. And that's what we've seen with a whole lot of craft breweries that, you know, I honestly think that unless the market for independent craft beer drinking people who are engaged in what the brewer's middle name is grows, and that's very, very hard to do, craft beer is a finite, you know, craft beer drinkers, passionate, engaged craft beer drinkers are a finite resource, and everybody's trying to mine that same resource. And to some extent, the more they do that, the broader that group becomes. But it's growing much more slowly than it did 10, 20 years ago. So the brands that are succeeding are, you know, surpassing that audience. They're surpassing the people that know you. You're a brand that stands out in the marketplace for people that have heard about craft beer, but to them it's really a premium for it. It's almost what the international premiums were or the domestic premiums were. You know, they don't necessarily want to drink vastly differently.
Stuff with the gold foil on the top of the cap.
Yeah. They just see the beers as a new style of beer that needs to engage them on a whole different level to keep that growth into the mainstream. Your brand needs to resonate on a different level whilst not alienating the people that got you started. And that was where I said that I think Stone and Wood probably had the capacity to do that, and that was clearly where their thinking around being a conscious business was leading them, but they'd never actually separated themselves from the independents. And, you know, you see around the world the brands that are plateauing. Sierra Nevada is probably the one that more than any brand around the world seems to have kept the growth trajectory, kept the faith with the people that got it there, but is now transcending craft beer to an extent, and you know, going into aligned beverages at the same time without hurting its main brand, which is fascinating.
Last one before we jump below the fold, Claire.
you mean we have
middle ground in air quotes for Queensland takeaway proposals?
Yes, Pete. So you may remember.
So this is a change to the original that we talked about a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I was going to say you might remember that we were discussing this because there were proposals about takeaways from takeaway alcohol, and restaurants and cafes had been allowed to do this. They'd been allowed to offer takeaway alcohol throughout the COVID period, and then proposals were made that excluded beer and pre-mixed spirits. There was a bit of a hullabaloo about it, I'll not lie. So one of the, if you'll remember, Pete, I think we had a chuckle about it, was that a criticism of beer was that it had a higher ABV potentially, and the sort of subtext was higher ABV than wine. Interestingly, there's been a parliamentary review committee who's had a look at these proposals again and has actually recommended, thankfully, a middle ground. So I believe cooler heads have prevailed on this one. Basically, they're suggesting that obviously beer, cider and pre-mixed drinks are included, but they knock that down to 1.5 litres. So a smaller amount than was allowed before. I think it was 2.25 litres. So some interest, and it was interesting to go through all the sort of stakeholder commentary and things like that. People were very vehemently against it, obviously, as you would expect from the IBA and a few individual brewers and things like that. And then, as you'd expect, Queensland Hotels are very anti it. Much more moderated this committee review than the previous proposals. So we're hoping this is just a proposal, but we're hoping that the Attorney General will agree that this is a little bit more of a reasonable option and hopefully pass this one, but we'll give you a little update when that happens.
Yeah, and as with everything else, if you're an adult and you're allowed to buy beer or whatever, then be an adult and just make responsible choices. Like, don't go out and, you know, get six bottles of, you know, 15% ABV wine or,
Funnily enough, and we'll come back to that in Below the Fold, there's a story I want to talk about that because the people that are ruining it for the rest of us is something I'd like to talk about, Pete.
Jot that down. I've got one too that's come up during the discussion. I want to get your question without notice and just get your gut feelings.
Okay.
But let's do that right now because that's it for the news. So thank you very much. Bye-bye and all that sort of thing. And welcome back to Below the Fold. And we begin Below the Fold with Mailbag. Now, don't forget, you can review us on iTunes or send us in an email to be in the draw for the letter of the week, which basically just means if we read it out, give us your details and we'll send something nice. Probably a dog bone bar blade from our good friends at Thirsty Merchants. You can also join our Facebook group. Just search Radio Brews News and use the password soapbox. And Mailbag is thanks to our very good friends at New Zealand Ale Trail. Head to www.nzaletrail.com or at nzaletrail on all social media to find the best beer experiences in New Zealand. Don't forget to like and subscribe, smash that like button and share it and all that sort of thing. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your, wherever you're listening to this through, because it costs you nothing, helps other people discover the podcast, and we do appreciate that. What are we going to start with? Do you want to just belt straight into that, Matt, since we're
Notes. So, yeah, no, there was just something that came up. There was a Media Watch, ABC Media Watch, love it, hate it, whatever, but they do raise some interesting issues about the media. And in a much longer thing about former cricketer Michael Clarke, probably better known for dating Lara Bingle, I would argue. That was his celebrity, much more than the way that his cricketing form stacks up against the Pontings and the Bradmans and the Alan Borders of the world. But anyway, the broader Media Watch thing was how he jumps up spruiking all sorts of, watches and cars and
is he like an influencer?
Well, he's become an influencer, he could influence the ball.
Well, it's just once you stop playing, you've got to
Make some money.
I appreciate this, but then when it comes to your personal brand, like one of the things that he was flogging was a cryptocurrency that disappeared as soon as ASIC started asking questions. So he doesn't seem to be particularly discriminating or discerning about what he is. But he was on flogging BevMart. It's an online store for alcohol, and he's apparently an investor in it. So it's just like any of the, Jimmy Brings or anything like that. No doubt he's hoping to build it.
Well, so it's a Uber grog.
Oh, I'm not into that.
Uber drinks rather than Uber eats, kind of thing.
Basically. So, like, which again, is something that is targeted. You know, the home delivery.
You ring up and they deliver stuff. Mm-hmm.
And this is why it's relevant to your point, Pete, about it's an alcoholic drink, is that the Restaurant and Catering Association and craft brewers and restaurants had to fight really, really hard against the natural inclination of the government to deny them, egged on by a highly partisan hotels association that wants to protect its patch, even though that they have grown their businesses phenomenally over the last decade, let alone over the last COVID period in Queensland. And all, you know, all of the anti-alcohol groups are potentially deservedly looking at alcohol delivery. And it's something that suits us all from time to time, if it's done responsibly and appropriately. The Media Watch story in this case was he was on breakfast television. And, you know, you're not allowed to advertise alcohol on television at certain hours because children watching breakfast television, one of those things. Mm-hmm. Now, this wasn't apparently an ad. He was on one of the morning TV shows, spruiking Bevmo.
Yeah, what have you been up to?
And it had absolutely nothing to do. Like, it wasn't him working in a plug as part of a bigger story. It was him just talking about Bevmo, talking about, you know, I'm a spirits drinker, things like that, and you know, in breakfast television. The interesting thing about this was that Media Watch does analyse. It's part of the deal you do. Like, when Dan Aykroyd's in Australia and you want to talk about Ghostbusters or his latest movie, he forces the conversation about Crystal Head vodka, which is his thing. Yeah, like it's the deal that media do with, you know, when you've got something to flog, quite often that's when they want to talk at the you know, and the media always wants to get a celebrity on because they know it's an easy mm-hmm. thing. So there is a deal that you do with the devil to some extent, but this had absolutely nothing to do with anything else. And apparently it was the day that a cricketer had refused to take the knee, and there was a very topical news story. They didn't even bring that in, even though they talked about it elsewhere on the news. The reason I'm going into all of this exposition is we have talked about, you know, like around Sons Drinks and some of the other things about the media releases that all you can have all of the alcohol codes in the world, but if people aren't going to adhere to them, and he's just talking about, you know, they're trying to make it a news item and it just wasn't. When it's just so glaring and gratuitous that it's not even raised in terms of anti-alcohol crusaders and things like that. It was Media Watch talking about the media code, you know, the broadcasting code. Mm-hmm. And there was nothing in the broadcasting code to prohibit it. It's alcohol advertising code. And it was, anyway, it was very, very complicated. And so you've got somebody who's got no relationship with the alcohol industry other than he'll flog anything that he can make some money from.
Oh, that's so tacky.
So it isn't respectful of the industry, its constraints, its long-term survival.
Oh yeah, you wouldn't have a clue, would he? You wouldn't have a clue.
And then you've got media who also don't give a shit, and you know they are just as happy demonizing the alcohol industry, you know, talking about alcohol-fueled violence and things like that. But then they're doing that. This is the people who are ruining it for the rest of us. It's such a glaring loophole that's going to be closed. And that means that, you know, potentially, you know, when smoking was banned, I did some writing for, I think it was a coffee magazine that had basically been set up by a tobacco company because there was a loophole in the law that, and I was writing about beer, had nothing to do with smoking or anything like that, but they set up a coffee magazine specifically because some magazines were still allowed to take cigarette advertising, and you know, and it closes the loophole for everything. But you know, potentially, you know, websites, news websites like us or Beer and Brewer or Crafty or anything like that mm-hmm. might suddenly go, well, you're talking about alcohol, so you're advertising alcohol, we're going to shut down all that, or plain paper packaging or whatever, because this is the sort of thing that gets through. So anyway, it was just like an interesting one of those, put a flag, you know, on it, because. Yeah.
Also, it says it wasn't a paid promotion. It wasn't a paid promotion.
But that's where celebrity. I don't think we should just call this. Claire says in one line what Matt spends half an hour trying to explain. segment, because that's what it was. It gets around it because it wasn't paid promotion, so it wasn't advertising, but it also wasn't a celebrity on talking about something celebrity related and then just going, oh, by the way, you know, where are you, mate? Oh, I'm out the front of my new bottle delivery store. It was purely him talking about the news being his thing.
Yeah.
as an influencer. But that's where, you know, so influencer marketing and all of those things are just the death of advertising, because they're so easily the loophole is so glaring, but it also just ends up making all alcohol advertising look on the nose. Thank you, Claire. Thank you for
if, like Michael Clark, you want to, you know, move more units, and at the end of the day, that's, you know, it's a free market economy, and that's the whole point, is to sort of, you know, create value and something that people want. And the best way for them to find your product would be to call someone like Relling's Label Stickers and Packaging, because they're able to not just supply labels for your cans or bottles, but they can also supply printed or blank cartons. They do can trays, tap decals, barcode, shrink sleeves, the whole thing. And before you ask, yes, the cans come to your door palletized and ready to fill. Nothing more to do. So give them a call on 1300 852 235 to discuss further. And if you've still got any data left on your phone and you want to make another call, Scar Fabricating builds reliable automated packaging line equipment that will fit in beautifully with Relling's Label Stickers and Packaging's cans. It's handcrafted to make life easier for brewers and their production team. So if you're a brewer looking for the best way to get your product out of the tap room and into the hands of your customers, Scar Fab has you covered. With a wide range of depalletizers, custom conveyancing, date coding, rinsing, drying systems, and a whole lot more, Scar Fab specializes in helping breweries of all sizes get their beer from keg to can. To find out more about how Scar Fab can help you sell more beer, visit www.scarfabricating.com today. That's Scar, S-K-A, fabricating.com to get started today. And we love them because that's 2 weeks in a row.
So we love Scar.
Well, good on.
We love a bit of Scar. Yeah. Absolutely.
We do.
I'm colouring my Dunlop Volley's black and white checks just to fit in with the whole Scar thing.
Yes. Oh, I love it.
And
Matt did edge the mailbag across to the side to make room for my soapbox. But if we can just go elbow deep, because there's one comment that we've got worthy of reading out from Josh Boyle about Coca-Cola and Ferrell.
Josh says, following the news of Ferrell, it's sad for the team, seeing as only a couple of weeks ago there was the announcement that the brew pub was to be closed, as we've said. Now CCA are looking for a buyer. From my point of view, it looks like they are downsizing to more easily find a buyer, or at least trying to make the business look like a good short-term investment. I just hope they end up with a good owner and not some holding company. The reason I say this, I've been through a few buyouts and downsizing for sale or efficiency improvement as an employee engineer. That's interesting. The opposite of what we were saying about why would you do it?
That's what I was getting at.
Yeah, maybe.
Are they looking to offload it so that there's a bargain price for the business?
That just seems mad.
Why? I mean, you mow your lawn before an open house.
Yeah. Maybe we just don't get it because we're not in that.
Because we're not smart money.
Well, we're not in Coca-Cola.
Because they did announce too, they announced that they were closing down the original brew pub, not putting it up for sale.
I just saw it, it just popped up.
Do you guys realise that the Lord Nelson has just gone up for sale?
I did not know that.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, after 35 continuous years.
Well, it's the oldest. Yeah. It's one of the debates about the oldest continuing functioning hotels.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Is it the oldest license or the oldest?
Yeah.
Or the something of war.
Well, there you go. We'll have to get onto that after we get off.
Good idea.
It is with heavy hearts, but also real hope for the future, that we announce today that after 35 plus years as current custodians of this grand and historic old bloke, we are offering the Lord up to the next chapter of his long and colourful life. So there we go. So Blair and his partners have been at the helm for each of those 35 years, and it's time to allow this icon to pass to new hands.
Wow. That's a passing of a significant milestone. We'll have to...
Good spot there, Pete.
Yeah. So now just one I'm going to quickly slide into the regretfully in a way, but then last week we gave a comment about Pete's pop culture references being on point, and we were joking about, you know, so he got his granddad into...
I didn't, getting listeners pointed it out.
You made me repeat it twice as well.
there was some discussion about the demographic... of that particular one. Paul Wilcox, hopefully he doesn't mind me mentioning his name, because it does carry a certain amount of shame there, Paul. he did say, I did the prof's pop culture reference. I'm the ripe old age of 36.
Too young for that.
I did respond and say, God, I'm not going to tell Pete that. He's the voice of a new generation. I'll never hear the end of it. And he did come back and sort of say, yes, he doesn't need more of an ego boost. But I'll still throw Pete that little bone, that little...
You've got fans, haven't
such
you?
Such a well-developed ego. I don't have a big head. But anyway, no, thank you for that. That was a lovely comment. And age is just a number. It's all about your experience and how you react to it.
Can I just add another one to mailbag? We've got time, haven't we?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Adam Forbes on the Facebook group. I spotted this earlier and I forgot. My bad. I forgot to put it in mailbag. He says, first time I've had a response from Fair about this, but I'm still calling bullshit on it.
Yes.
You see that one? I follow heaps of beer and alcohol companies and don't get many targeted ads. So this is regarding, you know, we kind of absolutely shredded
it. Because they did another one where they said that Friday night sitting there.
That's it.
And the response he got from Fair was sort of saying that, so he sort of said, look, you know, if you follow alcohol ads, you'll get them. And Fair respondents have saying, no, these were sponsored ads. These were targeted.
Who do you think they're targeted at?
What do you
people
think?
People that follow alcohol companies.
That's how it works.
I'm pretty sure that if you don't follow professionally to keep an eye and make professional complaints about the social media about alcohol companies, so you follow a long list of them. If you follow Crocheting Weekly and, I Don't Drink Alcohol websites, no one's going to spend money trying to convince you to drink alcohol.
No one's going to sort of... That's the point in Facebook targeted ads. Anyway,
there's a lot of supposition on our... And we don't want to fall into the Fair, found anecdote research ends mindset. So I was actually going to say that that was a really interesting, thank you to our activist readers, the best Absolutely. Facebook group on the internet, the best Facebook beer group on the internet, most informed, knowledgeable and all that. But... I was thinking we might actually get I didn't get a chance this week, but get a social media
that's a
targeting
great
expert
idea. Yes.
to come on and talk about,
how that works, how it works.
And and what you do, and if you're advertising,
because obviously we don't do that.
So we guess at it. We know enough of it to think that we're targeting. Actually, if you're targeting something, you want there to be a target to aim at. You're trying to get people to switch from one brand to another, not come to the category.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway,
it's absolute madness. Oh, that's a really good idea. I'll put that on my list.
Now, I've got a quick one for you before we bail. So 10 years of the IBA, Matt, Claire.
Yes, Pete.
Jump in the Wayback Machine. How different would it be if it had gone with craft and just stuck with craft, and then maybe you can factor in two variables? So one is the big guys were allowed to stay and play or without the bigs. But if they'd just gone stuck with craft, the Craft Brewers Association or the Craft Beer Industry Association, rather than hitching their wagon to independence, would it be any different? And if so, how? Discuss.
Yeah, well, look,
interesting.
Well, because the American Brewers Association is just the Brewers Association.
And they include the big brewers, same as New Zealand.
Yep.
Brewers Guild includes
still
the big
have
guys.
Volumetric
the Brewers Guild
restrictions, don't they, which keep getting changed each time company.
I think the sticking point at the time was the lack of acknowledgement that small brewers felt the big brewers were the enemy, and that really slowed take up and acceptance in the industry. I think craft wouldn't have heard it then, but I think they may have had to revisit the idea of craft beer. Actually, maybe they didn't, because the definition they came out was, again, another thing that, remember, Pete, it was born of a mindset that they didn't even define what it was. It was kind of like you need to look into the heart of the brewer to determine what craft beer is. Mm-hmm. And when so many brewers are doing the thing, using the techniques now. So, they were hamstrung in a way that they didn't come up with something early enough in the movement for it to have actually captivated people and led that discussion, and then they were too late into the craft beer thing that it had moved on.
But you're talking a little bit, Matt, from the point of view of how it would have been seen as an industry body to beer drinkers rather than...
No, to the industry itself.
Brewers or...
I think brewers didn't want to join because they felt that they were welcoming the lion into the den or the...
Isn't that interesting, Matt, because you see so many... collaborations and things
lions
like that
live in
between.
A den. You'd expect lions to be in a den.
Yeah, between what would be independent and are now major brewer owned.
Den as a lounge room there, Pete. Sorry, Claire.
Oh, sorry. What was that?
No. Sorry.
So, and what I'm saying, those lines are getting completely blurred now, anyway.
And that's the thing. So I think they stymied themselves more by having the big brewer in at the time, because you could have changed as it evolved, but there were too many brewers that held back because they saw it as being us against them. Mm-hmm. Funnily enough, the other thing that we keep seeing, the association has never really told its story very well as it's tried to work out exactly what it is. One of the criticisms that comes up, Coopers is the biggest independent brewery. Yeah, absolutely. Yep, no doubt. But it was quite funny. There was all of this discussion when they were talking about, okay, how do we define craft beer? How do we define membership? All of these sorts of things. You know, big brewers in, big brewers out. And then when it was, what's the size in terms of literage? And I think it was 25 million litres from memory.
I think it's weird that they put a literage on it. Like, surely if you're...
Well, in those days...
It's not too much of a good thing.
No, but that's... And that was always my discussion about what is craft, because in America, Sierra Nevada makes more beer than Coopers, you know, 6 or 7 times more beer than Coopers, but they're still craft. So why put an arbitrary... And it really came down to, it's not the quality of the beer, it's the control you exercise in the marketplace. Mm. Stone & Wood still isn't 25% of the... it isn't 25 million litres. They're under 20, I believe.
Yeah,
but they only exercise 1 million litres. So there was... During these early days, it was all fascinating to, you know, big brewers in or big brewers out. You know, Coopers in or out. And whilst the criticism seemed, you know, is why did you exclude Coopers? They went to Coopers and said, do you want to be in our club? And Coopers have said no.
Coopers said no. Oh, I didn't even realise. So much drama.
Yeah, because they were already a member of the Brewers Association. Wanted to be seen at the...
As bigger.
At the adults' table at Christmas, not at the kids' table, you know, with the plastic knives and forks.
I wonder what that... Could they have not been in both?
They could have, but that was the discussion. Oh, okay. But when they said no, it made it a little bit easier in a sense for... Because Coopers was already 55, 60 million litres, I'd hazard a guess. So suddenly you've got, like, all of these brewers, none of whom were making a million litres probably at that time in the Indies. You've got the bigger brewers who would have been... You know, the non-independent brewers who were outside of that range, but then you had Coopers that was 50 million litres. So that's where you had to make the cap, which was so irrelevant to the small brewers that they were able to bring it down to a more aspirational but still meaningful number. I was part of some of the very early conversations, but after that meeting that was photographed, that was when David Cryer and I, who had been initial observers and contributors, and were no longer part of it. So that all took place. But things I've heard since were that was the thing. They were able to make it an aspirational level so brewers could still grow. So you didn't have this situation in America where it used to be 1 million barrels and 2 million barrels and 3 million barrels and 6 million barrels as the brewers kept growing, which every time you change it, you're kind of diminishing what it is, so it allowed plenty.
You're kind of admitting
it.
It's got nothing to do with it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's all fascinating, and instantly there is no right or wrong number for any of this. The question that needs to be asked: who do we want our membership to be, and what do we want to achieve? Mm-hmm. Because that's where you're not. The debate very early on was not what is good beer and what is bad beer, because the big brewers are making good beer. It was, well, we need their resources if we're going to have a professionally, resource thing.
And if we're going to lobby government, we want lots of names on lots of signatories on our...
And I hate to say it, but on our petitions. They'll have the money. They'll have the money to pay for these lobbying efforts.
To get the data. And and we still don't have good industry data. You know, we created that database just so there was a number of the number of...
And that's
breweries.
Just one element of all the data you could get.
There's still been lots of resistance from people, you know, independent, CBIA/IBA stalwarts who still are not keen to share the numbers. The data's not...
Or they fudge the numbers, because if they say what they're really making, they have to pay a higher thing. And that was one of the early things. So as a professional-based body, one of the things that they did early on, you know, in addition to launching the conference and they did new categories. And I think the new categories was designed to make a smaller size that had a lower fees because, you know... And it's something that we get at Bruce News.
Nanobrewery or...
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't want Bruce News to be a directory site where, you know, poor old Dapto Brewery that I always pick on. Hopefully there isn't one because they're going to feel really disliked. But, you know, like some...
One day they will be and they're going,
this is the best advertising. He's always talking about Dapto Brewery.
Any publicity but, you know, is good
like,
publicity.
Oh, finally. I've been waiting for you guys to I've been waiting to get your beer.
Schitt's Creek Brewery, you know, that only sells to their own you know, marketplace. Mm-hmm. There is absolutely no point. Brews News, which is a national publication that targets brewers, writing about your small little thing on one hand, because you're much better off investing the money in a chalkboard for the people who are actually your customers. And I actually had a great chat with Isaac from Kodo Designs a little bit about this. But I know from a fact that then you say to that same brewery who you know reads every single email that we send out, they comment on the Facebooks. You go, hey, you obviously like what we do and see value in it. How about you take a paid subscription? They go, oh, well, what do I get?
Well, you get to read it.
You're already getting it. You know, you're just meaning that we can keep doing it and not, you know, not fill our thing with shit advertising or things that are relevant to you. Mm. Like, you know, incidentally, instead of Schitt's Creek, New South Wales, Schitt's Creek, WA, their lager that you don't care about. And that's the struggle that we've got. And that's, you know, incidentally, people always say, and you know, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm presuming, and when you sort of see the history of it, the first question, and when you hear what people sort of say, well, what has the IBA done for me lately? That's not how it works. Mm-hmm. It works by being an agency that is doing things for the industry. Mm-hmm. The second you start asking, what does it do for me? You actually kill what that association needs to be, because they're so busy trying to pick up, you know, do breadcrumb stuff that they're not doing the major stuff that actually builds the industry. And, you know, they're so distracted by making you happy that they're not doing the things that they should be doing. So join them, you know, even if you don't agree with everything. Have your voice heard internally rather than throwing stones. Anyway. And take a subscription to Brews News. Don't ask what we can do for you. Look at what we're already doing.
Because if nothing else, it does this. It protects you from lots of shit advertising. Instead, you just get really good advertising, like our friends at Cryomalt, Relling's Label Stickers and Packaging, and Scar Fabricating, and New Zealand Ale Trail, and Thirsty Merchants get each and every week. You can be part of that.
And incidentally, they're the people that are worth supporting, because the way that they think about their advertising, they don't make me say things like this. We say it because they are good people.
We say it because we love it, and they love that we
and it becomes a joke. You know,
exactly.
Anyway,
because so take a little bit like, a little bit like really well-made brewing equipment. It's seamless. So thanks very much. Thanks, Matt. Thanks,
thank
Claire.
You, Kate.
Thank you to everyone for listening. Enjoy your week, whatever that may bring. We're getting into the warmer weather, so drink good beer.
I don't know what happened there. I'm just going to see if I can capture it again. Matt, but I said, thank you, Pete.
No problem.
Like, Siri has obviously worked out there's some
she
sick dynamic between Pete, between you and I, Pete, that when I thank you, she has to thank me on your behalf. Hey, Siri, can you please do an introduction to Brews News?
I imagine if she did.
I don't have an answer for that.
Yeah. Gotcha, bitch. Drink fresh, drink local. Look after yourselves and each other. And wash your damn hands. And we are out.
Boom.
Don't forget, if you like what we do here at Radio Brews News, you can help us out in a number of ways. You can sponsor the show either by a small monthly contribution or through a one-off donation. You'll find details in the show notes. You can also review us on iTunes or whatever your favourite podcasting service happens to be. Let us know what you think and help others find and discover our shows. Finally, you can tell us what you think about what's going on in the beer industry by emailing us at producer@brewsnews.com.au. All letters received will receive in return, as by way of thanks, a Brews News bottle opener. We love hearing your thoughts on the stories we cover because, as you may have heard, beer is a conversation.